We are in part two of a series called Community, Coming Together in God's Love. And guys, this is something I didn't want to talk about, but I kept on being convicted. Like, I don't know if it was God, but I just felt like we need to talk about this. We're talking about politics. In case you weren't here last week, actually a lot of you weren't here last week, but if you were here last week, you're like, oh no, we just finished talking about heaven and hell, and now we're talking about politics. Can we get a break, right? We're not talking about politics in the sense of like, hey, you're a Christian, this is who you should vote for. I don't know enough about politics to provide a commentary. More so, I want to talk about how we as a community can be affected by politics and how we should respond to it. So just a quick recap, even in case you weren't here last week. In the midst of a division, which we're in right now, what are we supposed to do? And so last week, we looked at two characters in the Bible. One was Jesus, the other one was Paul, one of the first church leaders. And Jesus, what we looked at was, what was on the heart of Jesus when he was in the middle of a political divide? And what he did was he offered a prayer, and what he pleaded for was, Jesus pleaded that his followers be one. And we call this the high priestly prayer we find in the book of John. And Jesus prays and basically says, I've surrounded myself with 12 guys who are diverse politically. Like one person is a zealot, you know, a person who likes to, you know, get violent for political reasons. Another person here is a middle-class fisherman. A person here that's on the high end of society, someone who's on low end. We have a tax collector who works for another government. Like, he was afraid that if he gets taken away, dies on the cross, then the 12 of them will not get along. So he said, guys, the one thing you have to get right, the one thing, if you get everything else wrong, that's fine. This is the one thing I want you to get right. He gets on his knees and he prays, Lord, please keep them one. And then we're like, okay, that's nice, Jesus, right? That's cool that you're praying for unity. Anybody else? And it turns out the first century church prayed for the same thing. And we have Paul, who also pleaded for the church to be one. Right, we looked at Romans chapter 12, and it said that, like, you know, instead of one group saying we're better than you, you know, you should follow our leadership and all that kind of stuff, he said, no, instead of that, why don't you try to be under each other in the sense that you are a living sacrifice to each other? Like, no, no, you're better. No, 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 you're better. No, no, I'm here to serve you. It's like, oh, no, 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 you sit down. I'm here to serve you. If you keep on elevating the other person, he said, like, don't do any of those contests to see who's a better group or who's better, you know, who's better than who. Instead, do this contest. Keep out honoring each other. Because unless you're one, you got nothing, right? So what we concluded last week was this, that Christians need to prioritize our faith before politics. We have to say, you know what? My political party believes this. And you know, I could see how the Bible could fit into that. No, no, no. He's like, no, you have to do it the other way. This is where I stand in my faith, and I want to see what political party fits that. Now, I know what you guys are thinking, because I've met people like this too, and maybe I'm one of those people. I don't know, right? It's like, you're thinking, well, if you talk to the people on the left, they're going to say, oh, it's because I'm a Christian that I'm a left person. Or if you talk to a person on the right, like, oh, it's because I'm a Christian, that's why I lean right. And like a lot of people say, no, this is exactly the motto I go by, right? But the big issue here is, next slide, is this word right here, faith. Faith. What is this faith that we're living out, right? Like, what does it mean to prioritize your faith before your politics? What does that look like? So we're going to be focusing on this today. What does it mean to, like, what does it mean to allow your faith to define your politics? And before we move on to anything, I want to say, I just want to make this very clear. If you're wondering if I'm going to land this sermon on you should be left-leaning or right-leaning, the answer to that question is this. There are no political parties in America that fits Jesus's priorities, his values, his missions perfectly. Okay, so my response to that is, there is no political party that fits Jesus perfectly. Okay, so, and so because of that, I think we end up leaning left or right or whatever. So what I'm gonna do today is, here's a little worksheet that we're gonna do. We're gonna start with these three points. Each point leads to another, and by the end of this, I hope you understand what it means to let your faith define your politics. Oh, in case you weren't here last week, we define the word politics. It doesn't mean left or right. It means how you live with other people. How do you get along with people in your community? So, okay. So let's start with this, a little context. In the time that Jesus was walking this earth, they followed a bunch of commands, a bunch of rules. Okay, and there was about 613 of them. Now, if you ask different people, they'll count it differently because some of them overlap each other and some of them repeat itself. Sometimes it repeats itself but gives a different reasoning. So we don't know exactly how many commands there are, but let's just say 613 laws, okay? These are called the Mosaic laws because Moses in the Old Testament is the one that received these rules from God and gave it to everybody else, okay? And eventually these 613 laws, people were like, it's hard to memorize because it's not like everybody had a sheet of paper with all six, you know, right? Print was expensive back then. So they're like, there has to be a common thread through all these laws. And so different people in the Old Testament give it a shot. Like, let's see if we could condense the 600 plus to something shorter. So King David, I don't know if you guys heard of him, but King David in Psalm 15, he reduces it down to 11. He's like, here's 11 things. If you get these 11 things, you're fulfilling the 613. And then later on, another prophet comes along and says, no, I could actually reduce it down to 3. This is the prophet Micah. You can read about it in Micah chapter 6, verse 8. He basically says, all you need to do is these three things. Justice, which in the Hebrew, justice also means righteousness. Justice, mercy, and humility. If you get those three things right, you got it down. And then later on, another prophet comes along, Isaiah. And he says, no, I could reduce it down to 2 things. 613 laws down to 2 things. Okay, what are the 2 things? Justice and righteousness. If you get those 2 things right, then you're good to go. That's Isaiah 56. And then Jesus shows up and he says, I could do better, right? He's like, I could reduce it down to 1 command. This 1 command that's going to help like consolidate all the laws down to 1 thing. Well, what is that? It's so much easier to memorize. Are you okay? Is it Paul? Again? Don't point fingers. Actually, this command is for you, Paul. Ready? Ready? Okay, here we go. The 1 command. Jesus reduced all the 613 laws to 1 thing. This is it right here. John chapter 13. We went over this last week just to recap. A new command I give you. He's like, here's the 1 command. It's a new command. He says, love one another. But that's not the new command because that was in the Bible already, right? He says, no. Let me clarify what I mean by this. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. This is the 1 command. He says, if you want to know the 1 thing you got to get right, the 1 thing, if you can't memorize 613, here it is in 1 sentence. If you see me love people, Jesus would say, that's what I want you to do to the people around you. If you get that 1 command right, you have fulfilled all 613 laws. And in case you missed it, he says, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. If you love one another. Okay? So that's, and I probably say this like 10 times out of the year, maybe 20 times out of the year, because this is the 1 thing that I want everybody here to understand. So the love others, next slide. Love others as Christ has loved you. This is the 1 command that fulfills all commands. Like there's these weird dietary laws in the Old Testament. No, all that stuff is fulfilled if you do this 1 thing. And so they're like, we need a name for this. And unfortunately, there was no consensus of what they should call this. Some people call it the greatest commandment. Some people call it, Paul the Apostle, he calls this the law of Christ. There was the Mosaic law, 613. There was like the David law, there's, right? But there's the law of Christ. If you get this 1 law of Christ right, you are doing a great job as a Christian. That's what Jesus would say. Now, Paul the Apostle, who heard about this, one of the first Christian leaders, he was like, this is so cool. I'm going to write a letter about this. And he does. And that letter is called the book of Galatians. And this is how he uses the word, the law of Christ. He says, carry each other's burdens. If you see somebody in trouble, help them out. If somebody is carrying a lot of stress, listen to them speak, right? If somebody needs something, be generous towards them. If you carry their burdens, if you carry one another's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. So this is the mission critical thing. This is the 1 thing you have to get right. So let's go to that map again. The first thing, if you want to have your faith define your politics, the first thing you need to have is the law of Christ. Okay? Now, eventually the law of Christ, if you let it fuse into your bones, if it becomes all, if you start living this out, it begins to affect your second thing here, your conscience. Your conscience. What do you mean by that? Okay. Let me give you a little interesting tidbit about the Bible, okay? Did you guys know, like, if I were to ask you guys today, is slavery good or bad? You guys would be like, it's bad, right? I mean, can we all be in agreement here? Thank you. Okay, I'm talking to the right crowd. Okay, it's bad. Which verse in the Bible tells you that it's bad? I mean, if you want to be biblical Christians, you need to know this stuff, right? Well, it turns out there is no Bible verse banning slavery. Did you guys know that? Right? But we live in a nation, we live in a Western civilization right now that was built upon the law of Christ. It's infused so much to our bones that we are now at a point where we're like, I don't know if there's a verse about it, but I just know intuitively that it's wrong. Right? In the same way, if for somebody were to say, is playing video games for 10 hours straight, is that a sin or is that not? It's like, well, there's no verse about it, so I guess it's okay. But there's certain things in our lives that fuses into our core of who we are that eventually we get to a point where we start to realize, oh, this isn't right. Even though there's no verse about it. One of the biggest gripes that I have as a pastor is when I say, like, hey, I don't know if you should be doing that. And they're like, oh, you're a pastor, right? I'm like, yeah. It's like, well, show me in the Bible where in the Bible it says I can't do this. And I'm like, well, the Bible isn't the end all of everything about Christianity. There's a conscience that we grow out of following Jesus. And so I used to have a mentor who used to say, Kotz, if you're driving dangerously, that's a sin. And I'm like, where in the Bible is that? Right? But he just understands intuitively that if you're a dangerous driver, you could cause harm and you could break up families and you could cause death and all these things, right? And because of that, it is sin. Like, so you don't have to have a verse for it. Our conscience starts to develop. So we believe that slavery is a sin. Slavery is a sin because we are just taking it for granted. We grew up in a society who have already had built up a conscience, collective conscience, that we believe that this is not right. And you're thinking, I'm guessing what you're thinking is, but isn't it like, duh? Like, everybody believes that slavery is a sin? Can we all agree on that? It's like, the answer is no. As a matter of fact, before the time of Jesus, slavery was self-evident. Slavery was something where people were like, yeah, of course we have slaves. As a matter of fact, here's a quote from Aristotle. This is 400 years before Christ. This is what he said. For that some should rule and others be ruled is a thing not only necessary, but expedient. Like, hey, everybody knows this is the right thing to do because it helps our society grow, right? Like, this is a good thing. From the hour of their birth, some are marked out for subjection, others for rule. Now, when they say, and we don't know exactly what he means by from the hour of their birth, but some people would say, have argued that when you look at a baby, the only thing you could tell is maybe its race, skin color. It's like, oh yeah, you're meant to be a slave. So like embedded in this is this self-evident, they saw it was self-evident, but they were basically like, this is racism, this is slavery. And they thought it was good. They needed this in order to make society function, right? But as early as just a few hundred years, like 200 to 300 years after Christ, the church started saying stuff like, guys, I think this is a sin. And people would be like, where's the Bible verse? Like, no, like slavery breaks up families. Like when we buy somebody from a poor family, we're taking that person away from that family and we're taking away rights. That doesn't seem like the law of Christ. So we start from law of Christ, and that moves into consciousness, like your conscience. You just know intuitively something's not right about it because you've let the law of Christ fuse into your core, the core of who you are. And once you start doing that, you're going to discover a few things. When you see something that's not good happen around you, you start to feel these things. You start to feel disturbed, you start to get irritated, and you start to feel convicted, right? Like when somebody around you is disrespected, you're disturbed. You're like, oh, something's not right about this. This isn't how it should be, right? Or when you see injustice, when you see somebody suffering, needlessly suffer, you feel irritated. You're like, that's not sitting well with me, right? When you see somebody like experience loss, somebody who has a need and there's an abundance of it, but they have no access to it, when somebody gets sick or somebody undermines the health of a whole community, you feel convicted, like maybe there's something I could do about it. That is the law of Christ that's building up your conscience. And what you're going to discover over time is this. The things that start to disturb, irritate, and convict you, you're going to discover that these are the exact same things that disturb, irritate, and convict Jesus. And you're starting to feel this Christ-likeness. Now, when the Bible uses the word Christ-like, like, oh, we're going to be Christ-like, it doesn't mean they're going to grow a beard and wear a sash and they're going to walk around and start eating fish and bread all day. No, no. When they talk about Christ-likeness, they're talking about how your heart, your conscience is starting to align with the conscience and heart of Jesus. So let's look at the thing again. We have the law of Christ, and our conscience is formed by it. And some people will call this the Holy Spirit, right? The Holy Spirit's trying to form your heart, transform you from the inside out. And as you are being formed, you start to develop a political position. But you're probably thinking, Kotz, Pastor, I've noticed that according to this chart, wouldn't that imply that everybody in the church should have the exact same political position, right? And the answer is no. And the reason why it's a no is because this is not the only factor that's being inputted into our political position. We also have, next slide, we also have another input. There's something else that's also forming our political position, right? And for this reason, a lot of us in the church, and this is actually, remember I talked about this last week, it's a healthy thing for everybody to disagree with each other. The reason why we disagree with each other is because of something. Here's a quote by a guy named Rufus Miles. If you know his name, you're probably like heavy in the business world. He created something called the Miles Law. This is the Miles Law. Where you stand depends on where you sit. Have you guys heard of this before? Where you stand depends on where you sit. He's talking about how your, like, this is not a Christian thing, guys, but I'm going to borrow it because it's so good. What he means by this is this. Our perspective, that's where we stand, is determined by our context. That's where we sit. In other words, you have a political view right now that's unique to you. But if you were born in a different part of the world, you would probably have a different political view. Like, so where you're born matters, right? If you're born in Alabama, I guarantee you, you will not have the same political views that you have right now. Maybe similar, but different, right? If you were born rich, if you're, you know, or maybe you are rich, you were born rich. If you're born poor, right, you will have a different experience and therefore you have a different political view, right? If you're born a different race, a different skin color, you will have a different political view. If you're born in a different part of the world and you had to fly in and now you're an immigrant, you will have a different political view than the one you have right now, right? Different neighborhood. If you were just born just a few blocks down, you'll have a different story to tell than the one you have right now. If you grew up speaking a different language, you will have a different political view. You make different choices in life. And those things, that's your context, you can only stand from where you've been sitting. And that's what Miles' Law is, right? And the best way to probably illustrate this is this. If I were to ask you, do your parents have the same political views as you? You would probably say no. And I would say, or are they wrong? And then you would probably say, no, they lived in a different context, a different time, right? For some of you, you'll say, my parents, well, they were in internment camps, incarceration camps. And that's why they see the world differently than I do. Exactly my point, okay? So our political views are a mixture of faith and experience. Okay? We have to keep that in mind because this is true not just for some people. It's true for everyone, you included. Okay? You're like, oh, I don't let my... No, it does. You just don't know it. It does, right? And because of that, their political views that you disagree with, it doesn't mean it's wrong. It's right for them, but doesn't make it wrong to you. I mean, it could be wrong to you, but it doesn't make them wrong. Okay? Because they have a different context than you. So, because of that, our first goal should never be to change someone else's political views. That's none of our business. If you keep thinking and you keep trying to change somebody else's political views, I guarantee you, you will not have friends at the end of the year. Like this is, especially on an election year, you will not have any friends, okay? Our first goal should be always to be to understand the other person's context. This should always be our first move. And there's another word for this, is to empathize. Like, you have to, like, I don't understand why you voted for that person. It's like, exactly. You don't understand because you don't know their story, right? And the reason why you shouldn't try to change somebody else's political views is because you can't change someone else's context. If you want to see that person have the same political views as you, it means that you have to get them out of their context, somehow change their past, have them come live with you now, eat the same food, have the same language, go to the same work, same, you know. If you want them to agree with you 100%, you have to change their context. And not even that person that we're talking about, not even that person has the power to change their context. You can't change where you were born or what language you grew up with or what kind of food you grew up with or the neighbors you had or the discrimination that you experienced. You can't control that. And for that reason, what makes you think you can change theirs? So maturity is recognizing that everyone comes from a different context. And we could use a lot more maturity in this world, amen? If we could just understand each other a lot more. If you disagree with someone, it's not because they're wrong. It's because they're different from you. And everybody is different from you, okay? That's why if you are like leaning on the left or the right, even in your small circle of, or maybe it's a big circle, I don't know, of people who agree with you, you're bound to find disagreements even in that. Because even the people who are leaning in the same direction you are, they all have different views also and different contexts that they grew up in. Now, Paul, I talked about, not our Paul, this Paul, Paul has experienced this also. He's actually writing letters to different churches in the first century that end up in the Bible. So we have them in the Bible now. If you read his letters, you're going to discover that there's a lot of things that he talks about. The one of the things he talks about all the time to many different churches is how we need to get along because there's this division that's happening inside the church. So Paul writes a letter to this church in Ephesus called the Letter to the Ephesians. And he basically says, guys, you need to get along. There's this division that I'm seeing happening and we need to make it work, guys. And then when Paul is asked like, what do you think the problem is? This is Paul's way of saying, I'm not exactly sure, but I do know a few things for sure. This is him talking about the division in the church in Ephesus. He says, our struggle, the division that we're experiencing, is not against flesh and blood. That's code for humans. Our enemies are not the people we disagree with. Now, keep in mind, this isn't just a political divide. In Paul's day, these were people who were trying to kill each other. It's like, yeah, the guy that comes to you with a sword, they're not our enemies. Like, okay, you know. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. It's not against people. Well, then who is it? Who is our enemy, Paul? He said, no, well, it's against rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of the dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. This is Paul's way of saying, guys, I don't know why we're fighting each other, but I do know one thing. The one thing I do know is that the enemy is not the person that's sitting right across from you. That is not our enemy. Well, what is it? It's like, well, I don't know. It could be the person in charge. At the time, it was the emperor. It's like, it could be Caesar. In our context, it could be the president. It could be, right? It could be the authorities. It could be the government. I don't know. Or it could be some spiritual forces. It could be the spiritual forces that's trying to get in between us. It's like, I don't know. But one thing I do know is that the person that you're talking about, the bad mouthing that's happening, that person is not the enemy. Because that's the person we're supposed to be loving. Because Jesus died for that person also. He's like, you guys have to break up this separation that's happening. And what is that thing that breaks that up? He says, empathy. If you're able to understand the other person, let's go to the map again. If you're able to understand what that person's context is, if you understand that, he says, that's half the battle. If you understand that the person that you disagree with is not your enemy, that's half the battle. The other is not your enemy. You could disagree with them. You could debate with them, right? My goal here is not to change your political allegiance. I'm not educated well enough in political science to even make a case on this, okay? But what I do know as a pastor is oneness is very, very important. And the thing we have to preserve in order to keep this oneness is understanding. If we could feel the other person, and by the way, when we start to understand the other person, you may not change that person, but maybe you might change. Maybe not your political position, but you might change and say, okay, I used to be very much against people who were against me, but now I understand. I still disagree with them, but I understand where they're coming from. If I lived their life, grew up in their family, spoke their language, if I was discriminated like they were, then maybe at that point, I would probably have the same political view as them. That wasn't my story, but that was their story. I understand them. I understand why that person stands. And you know what? I hope you keep standing for what is right in your context. I'll keep standing for what is right in my context. So like I said, half the battle is understanding this. So what's the other half? I have some suggestions. The question is, well, what can we do about this? What can we do? I'm going to offer you three suggestions. Take it or leave it. You could be like, Pastor, I have better ones. Go with that, okay? This is just me saying we need some application in this sermon, so I'll give you three. And they all start with the letter L. Okay, first one, listen. 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 And what I mean by listen is not just like listening like music, okay? We're talking about listen to people who don't experience the world the same way you do. If you call yourself a Jesus follower, if you call yourself a Christian, spend time listening to atheists. Listen to their story. If we did, maybe we might have a better reputation in our communities. Maybe there's something that the churches are doing on Sunday mornings that's affecting the people who are not churchgoers on Sunday mornings. One of the examples that I could think of is, we have to pay for that parking lot, so we're like, let's just park on the streets. And what we discovered is that the people who live across the street from us, they don't like it when we come and park on their side of the street. And we didn't know that, and we're being a bad witness to them, right? So I started saying to this church, guys, if you can, please park on this side of the street, right? And when we were practicing in the morning, we tried to close that door because we used to leave it open for the airflow. But what we discovered is that while we're here worshiping the Lord, they're like trying to sleep in because they stayed up late last night. Have conversations with people who don't go to church if you are a churchgoer. Yes, yes. If you are Asian, talk to somebody who's not Asian. If you're white, talk to somebody that's black. If you're Hispanic, talk to somebody that's, I don't know, Italian. Talk to somebody who doesn't have the same ethnic community as you. If you're old, talk to somebody who's young. I promise you, they don't bite. On Sundays, at least they don't, right? And if you're young, talk to somebody who's older than you or somebody who's way older than you. Learn about their history. What did it feel like to grow up as you? If you're straight, talk to somebody who's gay. Learn their stories. How has the church affected your life? Oh, really? You know, and learn some stuff, right? If you are a citizen in the United States, talk to somebody who's an immigrant. Listen to their story. If you're involved with the military, talk to a civilian. If you're a civilian who's not in the military family, talk to somebody in the military and listen to their stories. If you're left, talk to somebody on the right. If you're independent, talk to somebody who's not. If you're single, talk to somebody who's married. If you're in college, talk to somebody who graduated college. Talk to people who are not like you because you might hear a story that you never heard before. That's the first one. First L is listen. Second L, learn. Become a student rather than a critic. We're so good at this, right? We're so good at being critics. Let me tell you this. A lot of us, the reason, like this is like a no-brainer. Yeah, listen then learn, right? This is what I've learned over the past, at least past 5 years. Every place becomes an echo chamber if you discount everything that doesn't fit into your worldview. So if I were to listen to somebody, it's like, oh, wait, I disagree with you politically, so I'm not going to listen to your story. No, no, no. What you're doing is you're putting yourself more and more into an echo chamber. That's the opposite of what we're trying to do here. Learn. Learn what it feels like to be them. Is there anything that you have leverage that they don't have leverage, and how can I use my leverage to help bless those people around us? Love others in the way that Christ has loved us, right? For example, I'm a pastor. I have access to certain things, not many things, but I have access to some things that people who are not ordained that they don't have access to. How can I use my access? How can I leverage that for the people around me, right? For some of you, you have access to certain people or some political, I don't know, right? You might have access to some things that I don't have access to. And how can you use what God has blessed you with to bless the people around you? So learn their stories. And finally, love. Never burn a relational bridge over a political view. For those of you who are old enough, okay, think about the person you voted for 20 years ago. And think about the friendships that you lost voting for that person. I don't know if you did. I don't think it was as divided today as it was back then. I think. I don't know. Right. Your friendships last forever, or they should. But your political views don't last that long. Let me ask you, has your political view changed in the last 20 years? Was it worth losing a friend over? Right? Never, ever lose a relationship over politics, because your oneness is more precious to God than your political view. It is important that you focus and you prioritize your relationships over your political view. In other words, it's more important to be loving than to be right. Because I know in your mind you think you're right. So, summary. Disagreement is inevitable. We all have different contexts, right? But division is a choice. Division is a choice. And the reason I know this is because in my family, I disagree with everybody in my family. But we're still together because it's a choice. If we split over every time we disagree, I would not have a family. So listen, learn, and love. When I was in middle school, I want to share a story with you guys. When I was in middle school, I went to a school in Westchester called Orville Wright. I don't know. Anybody Orville Wright guys? Yeah? Yep. Woo. All right. Orville Wright. Right across the street is a small Vons right there. And I used to live just a few blocks from there, so I could just walk to school. I walked like 10 blocks to get to school every morning and walk 10 blocks home. And while I was at that school, I made a lot of friends. And one of my friends, his name was Devin. And he was black. And he every once in a while, he'll be like, hey, Kotz, after school, you want to go to Vons and we'll buy a drink or something. Soda. Not drink, you know, drink, right? And so, you know, like a good sixth grader, like a good eighth grader, I would go home and I would ask my mom, like, hey, you know, tomorrow I'm going to come home from school a little late because Devin and I, we're going to go to Vons and we're going to buy a soda and we're just going to hang out. You know, that's what cool middle hires did, right? And so she's like, sure, right? So she gave me, I think it used to cost like 50 cents. I don't know how much drinks are now, but yeah, 50 cents. So I would put it in my pocket, I would go to school, and at school, I'd be like, hey, are you going to stay after school? I'm like, yeah, of course. And so after school, Devin would be waiting for me at my locker, and we'll go out the gate, we'll cross the street, and then we'll get our drink, and we'll go to the register, pay for it. We'll both get 3 seats, we'll put it in our pockets. So I usually throw my receipt away. And then we'll just drink until we finish the can. After we finish the can, I'm like, okay, I'll see you next week. And then we go, you know, our separate ways. And on Mondays, we'll talk about how fun that was on Friday. That's what we cool kids did back then.
Yeah.
Okay. But this happened for several weeks. Like every Friday we would do this. And eventually he's like, hey, can we do this on Wednesdays? And I'll go home and ask my mom, can you do this on Wednesdays too? She's like, sure. And as we were doing this, I started noticing that after school, he would just like stick close to me. Like, hey, we're across the street. And he'll be like, okay. And he's like, I'm like, give me some room, bro. You know, like, so I'm trying to, you know, enjoy my drink. I think I was bending to Sprite back then. It's like, trying to enjoy my Sprite. And I also noticed the other things. Like, I'm like, okay, so I'm always like, after I get my receipt, I throw it away, but he always puts it in his pocket. And I'm like, why do you keep your receipts? It's like, and he would just like, be like, yeah, whatever. But after a while, you know, after he didn't answer my questions about why he kept his receipt, I started like making fun of him. Like, oh yeah, you have a collection of receipts at home, you know, you're weird. And then one day, as we were sitting down drinking, it sounds bad when I say like, we're sitting down drinking after school. He opened up to me and said, Kotz, the reason I hold on to my receipts is because years ago, I was at this Vons by myself, and I walked out of the store with a drink that I paid for, and one of the people pulled me over and accused me of stealing it. Yeah. And I said, no way. It's like, yeah. And ever since then, I hold on to my receipt so I could prove to them if they ever pull me over again saying, hey, you're stealing that from my store, I could say, no, I have the receipt right here. And I thought, I've never experienced that in my life. Like, I've never had that fear before, somebody accusing me of stealing. And then, you know, as I hung out with him more and more and more, so I was like listening to him and I was learning. And the learning part was interesting because the second thing I learned about him, he didn't tell me explicitly. I kind of figured it out. The reason why he would always be so close to me after school is because he felt safer walking with me, because if he was with me who looked like me, he felt like no one would accuse him of doing something bad. You know, I'm like the Asian in a school that like, oh, Asians don't do anything bad, right? I guess. I got in trouble a lot of times in the past by the law sometimes. But anyways, that's a different story. But I'm like, oh, he wants to be with me because he feels safer with me. That if he was just sitting there by himself after school until his, and I also learned that his mom had to work two jobs, so that's why he didn't get picked up right after school. I'm like, oh, this. And so I remember going home saying, hey, mom, is it okay if I stay late after school every day? You know, I'm going to hang out with Devin. I'm going to sit with him until he gets picked up from school. And she's like, sure. You know, so, you know, after school, you know, I didn't have 50 cents every day. So I'm like, hey, I'm just going to hang out with you after school. He's like, oh, thank you. So I would just sit there until his mom would pick him up. Sometimes at 4 o'clock, sometimes she'll be late 4:30, you know, but I'm just sitting there waiting for Devin's mom to pick him up. And I felt like he started to like loosen up a little bit more because he felt safer all of a sudden. And after a while I asked my mom, like, is it okay if I invite Devin over? And she's like, sure. And so, you know, once a week or several times since then, I invite him over to my house and he would hang out there, and then his mom would pick him up from our house. And because I learned from listening to him, and eventually I was able to love him in the way that I thought I could best love him. This is what it means to be political in Jesus' economy. He wants us to be one. Now, I don't know what Devin's political views are, right? I don't know. But all I know is that I was able to leverage some of the things that I was given by God to help him feel safe. And if we just did a little bit more listening and learning and loving, I think the kingdom of God would be a better place. And just imagine, right, if we got this right. If I don't care if the Christians don't get it right. Let's just say the people in this room, just this room, got it right. Do you think the world would be a better place next week? If we just got this right, yeah. And this is what Jesus meant when he said, we want to experience heaven here on earth. If we did this, we could make a dent in our community. And if more people did it, then we can make a dent in our state, our city, our nation eventually. So let's all learn to listen, learn, and love. Amen? All right, let's pray.